The rabbi said, I'm losing.
Okay, so good evening, everyone. If everyone could mute, except when they have a question. There are a bunch of people here, Baruch Hashem, because there's a holiday coming up. It's called Pesach, and it sometimes causes a bit of a stress to people. And this year, there's additional things going on that may cause a little more of a stress. So we will try to go through some of the processes, the procedures in preparing and cleaning for Pesach about different products. Then there's a mitzvah. Just make sure, again, make sure please mute yourself unless you have a question. Okay. So I like to say that the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov is a Torah obligation. The mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov is a Torah obligation. And sometimes things that people do in preparation are stringencies or perhaps are not required at all. And it's important to try to, if it's going to harm your Simchas Yom Tov, we need to consider whether it's appropriate to do so. So I'm going to try to go through the topics that I'm going to go through. So what I have here, you can see hopefully on your screen, like those who are on a computer can probably see it more easier. I have a sheet here, and the topics are kashering, then we're going to go to cleaning, then we're going to go to tevilas kelim, food products, sale of chametz, burning chametz, and inviting elderly single people to your seder, and what to do about that issue as well. And I hope to, I'm sure that there will be questions this evening that I will not be able to answer. So I will take some copious notes, and I will try to get back to you on those questions. And God willing, I'll get back to you on those questions. And then, okay, I'm not sure how to do that, how to drag it. Someone told me I can drag into the chat. No, hold on. I'm not sure how to do that. Okay. So in any case, we're going to begin. Okay. Now, so basically, when you're dealing with kashering for Pesach, there are two different issues. There is the issue of cleaning, and then there's issue of kashering. Again, please, everyone mute. I need everyone to mute unless you have a question. Okay, so the goal of cleaning is to remove all tangible traces of chametz. As a practical matter, items that have narrow cracks, crevices, or other areas that cannot easily be cleaned, you can't kasher them for Pesach. You cannot even eat the smallest amount of chametz. Okay, so therefore, anything that may have little pieces, little nooks and crannies where food or dirt can get in. Someone asked me this year about Instant Pot, and I wasn't aware of all the details of it. Then I found out I have one in my house, but I also found out that there are little nooks and crannies that are on the Instant Pot, and therefore chametz can get stuck in there, and therefore it's not appropriate to try to use the Instant Pot, because wherever there are little nooks and crannies of a kli, so there you're concerned about real tangible chametz. The other thing that we're doing, other than cleaning, we're also kashering. So the goal of kashering is to remove taste that was absorbed usually through the medium of heat. Ashkenazim rule that on Pesach, even a stale taste of chametz, more than 24 hours, that was absorbed is forbidden. Generally speaking, the way that chametz was absorbed, taste is absorbed, is the way that it's removed. So if it absorbed through dry heat, you use dry heat to remove it, which is called libun. We're going to discuss this, don't worry. And if there was liquid heat, it would be kosher through liquid heat. In other words, if something went directly on, let's say a hot plate or a stovetop of food went directly on it without a liquid medium, you need to kosher it one way through libun, through dry heat. But if it absorbed taste through liquid heat, then you would kosher it through what's called hagala. As again, we'll talk about these issues. My positions tonight are based on a few things. Number one is that I do not believe in koshering glass. Most Ashkenazim hold like that. Sfardim, actually hold you don't even need to kosher glass. Most Ashkenazim hold that you cannot kosher glass. I also follow the opinion that you can kosher plastic on Pesach. Some poskim were strict about this. Rav Moshe Feinstein was strict about this. Rav Moshe Feinstein was strict, but other poskim and some of the kosher organizations like the CRC are lenient. So therefore I allow it. In any case, so ovens. Let's go very quickly. Ovens. So a non-self-cleaning oven, you clean the entirety of the oven with an abrasive cleaner to get rid of the tangible chametz, then you turn on the oven to the highest temperature for an hour and a half. For the broiler pans, according to Rav Schechter, if they come in direct contact with food, they can also be koshered as well like this. Many of us have self-cleaning ovens, and what you simply do is you remove any visible pieces of food and then go through the entire process of the self-cleaning cycle with the racks in place, and you're good to go. Pretty straightforward. What people have been doing for probably many years. Regarding stovetops, so the big issue this year, I got a lot of questions on, was the glass stovetop. For gas stovetops, you can the grates could be koshered in the oven. As discussed above, again, can people mute, please? People mute, please. Thank you. Electric stove. Sorry?
Rabbi, let me just make a suggestion for those people. If you tap, if you're on an iPhone and you see the little picture of the rabbi at the bottom of the screen, tap on the picture and it will bring up the menu with the little microphone. Then tap the microphone to mute yourself.
Okay, thank you.
It's not working. It just says waiting in the middle.
Okay.
That's what it says, yeah.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you. Okay, try not to make a lot of noise then, I guess. Okay, now, regarding electric stovetops, you clean the coils, turn on high for 10 minutes. The cooktop surface, and ideally the knobs and the drip pan, should be cleaned and covered for Pesach. Regarding the glass stovetops, so everyone's trying to figure out where to get these things. Apparently, you can get an eighth. You try to get a glass stovetops. The problem with glass stovetops is we're concerned that the area where the heat is, so that's kosher. You could turn that on, and that would be kosherable. The concern is that in the middle of Pesach, your pots don't always stay on the heating element and may slide to the side. The area that's not on the heating element cannot be koshered unless you pour boiling hot water on it. I don't recommend, glass you can't even kosher. As far as you can't even kosher it. The only thing you can do maybe is you can put aluminum foil, which some say is harmful to the glass. It's not a smart thing to do. And therefore you can either replace the glass stovetop, that's what we do in our house. We remove it and we get a different stovetop for Pesach. However, you could also, what's the concern? The concern is that, let's say the pot slides off the heating element, and let's say it goes on the surface of the rest of the stovetop that's not the heating element, and if there's a spill, so there'll be a taste transfer from the surface of the glass top to the pot. So the way that you get around that problem is if you raise the pot a bit and you put, I think they say, a metal disc of at least 1/8 of an inch to place it directly under the pot. So you raise it a little bit between the pot and the heating element. So that obviates that problem. If you want to know where to get such a disc, just look at the Pesach Questions WhatsApp. Everyone has a different opinion. I don't know where to get it, but everyone has a different opinion about it, and some people have got it, so just look at the Pesach Questions on WhatsApp. Okay. So hello?
They're called heat diffusers.
Heat diffusers, thank you. Okay, they're called heat diffusers. I'm actually going to make a note of that. Heat diffusers, thank you. Okay, good. Okay, now, dishwashers.
Can you use aluminum foil?
What, for the...
Can you put a piece of aluminum foil on top of the...
If it's at least 1/8 of an inch thick.
Okay.
It has to be... I'm concerned that it will slide off. That's my problem.
Okay.
I'm concerned that it will slide off. Okay? Technically speaking, if the pot remains on the heating element the whole time, it's not a problem. I just think it's like... You're playing with, you know, it's potentially going to cause problem. So I'd say they recommend actually a metal disc. Okay, regarding a dishwasher, again, I am lenient in this regard. There are some poskim who are strict. If the inside surface is metal or plastic, you can kosher it. What you do is you clean out the filter, you wait 24 hours, and you run it on the hottest cycle with dishwasher detergent. This is working with the assumption that you can kosher plastic for Pesach. Again, not everyone holds like this. Rav Moshe Feinstein was strict in this regard. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was lenient. And so there are different opinions about this. Okay, you can kosher a microwave if the inside is metal or plastic. To kosher the microwave, you should clean the microwave and then preferably wait 24 hours. And not use the microwave. If you don't have time and you don't have 24 hours, you can dispense. That's a chumrah. That's a stringency. You don't have to wait 24 hours if it's too difficult. Generally speaking, the 24 hour requirement when you're dealing with liquid heat. So if you have, let's say you're koshering, let's say a Pesach kli, a Pesach utensil, and you're koshering it in a pot, so there you'd have to wait 24 hours so that the taste, in the kli, in the utensil, if it's less than 24 hours, we're concerned when you put it into a pot, the taste will go out and come back, the chum taste will go out and come back in. After 24 hours, it's not significant. That rationale doesn't apply with a microwave. So if need be, you don't have to wait the 24 hours. But what you need to do is you need to clean it really well. Some microwaves, you got to really work hard to make sure, again, nooks and crannies, like, you know, the holes, you got to make sure it's really clean. And then you should place a cup of boiling hot water until the water begins to evaporate. And you should try to, if you can, replace the plate at the bottom of the microwave. If that's too difficult, then what you can simply do is wrap the food multiple times with saran wrap when warming it in the microwave. Okay? Okay. So warming drawer. So the problem with kashering a warming drawer is that warming drawers do not reach a temperature of libun kal. A warming drawer is something which sometimes food, in order to kasher it, you need to do what's called libun kal. Because some people don't put the food directly on the warming drawer, but sometimes food may get on the warming drawer. I'd be nervous. About assuming that chametz never got on the surface of the warming drawer. If that's the case, then since the warming drawer absorbed taste through dry heat, you would only be allowed to kasher it through dry heat. That's called libun kal. So in the past I have expressed a way to kasher it by using Sterno cans, and actually if I looked in the CRC. A guide this year, and they do suggest this. There have been people in our community who've used it, and they said that it caused a short on the warming drawer. So I don't want to be held responsible. Baruch Hashem, I think it just caused a short and didn't destroy the warming drawer. So I cannot recommend it. I've used it in the past, a Sterno can, and it worked. But some people found that the warming drawer cannot tolerate that much heat. So I don't really have a way of koshering the warming drawer for Pesach. Okay? Regarding barbecues. So since food is roasted directly on the grill, the grate should be heated until it glows to be properly koshered. So you can use a blowtorch. So I would recommend that for most people. Or you can sandwich the grates between charcoal briquettes and setting them on fire. If the grill has a hood, then the empty gas grill cavity must be koshered by cleaning, closing the hood, and setting it to the highest temperature for an hour. You could also replace the grates, okay, as well. Okay. A Keurig coffee maker, this is in the OU guide, so the coffee maker must be cleaned well, not used for 24 hours. You remove the K-cup holder. You pour boiling hot water over the K-cup holder. You run a kosher for Pesach K-cup in the machine. And that's how the OU said you kosher it. Okay, hot plates. Okay, so you can clean the hot plate. You can leave it on the highest setting for a half an hour, which probably koshers it, which may kosher it. But just to be on the safe side, I would like it to cover it with two layers of heavy aluminum foil. So that even if, in other words, it's a question whether you're really going to totally kosher it. So I think it's the best thing, because the question is what's the heat if it's on the highest setting. If you cover it with two layers of heavy aluminum foil, then I think that you're good to go. Okay? So that's how you can use a hot plate. Some people have their own hot plates for Pesach, but I think certainly if you cover it with two heavy sheets of aluminum foil, that would be good. I already mentioned the Instant Pot. Okay? Again, if you can, you can turn off your, just place on mute if you can. Okay, regarding a hot water urn, I want to just clarify something that I said on the Pesach questions chat. That when I said that you can, you don't really need to kosher an urn. I just want to be clear about that. I probably wasn't so clear in the Pesach questions chat. If it's a type of urn which is not brought to the table, it's never used for anything but heating hot water, and it's not washed with chametz items, then you can use it without koshering. That's what the CRC writes. If it's small enough to be brought to the table, or if it's used to heat other beverages, if you ever warm challah or other food on top of it for Shabbos, then I'm concerned that maybe some challah may have got into it, right? If you ever cleaned it with vinegar, I think someone in the WhatsApp chat said they clean it with vinegar, or you wash it with chametz dishes, then you need to kosher it. So how do we kosher it? So the way you kosher it is you kosher with Hagala. We're going to talk about Hagala. It's immersing in boiling hot water. We're going to talk about koshering through Hagala a little bit later. The urn itself should not be used 24 hours before koshering. You fill it almost to the top with water. You turn it on. When the water reaches the highest temperature while still plugged in, boiling water should be added to the urn until it overflows. Okay, that's the hot water urn. The sink. You clean a metal sink, you clean it, you clean the faucets and the knobs. Don't use the sink for anything other than cold water for 24 hours. You boil water in one of the more large pots that have not been used in 24 hours. You dry the sink and then you pour boiling water over every spot on the sink and on the faucet. And then you replace and clean the filter and get new sponges of dishwashing liquid. Let me be very clear about this. What's very challenging about koshering a sink is you need to make sure that you get boiling water over every spot on the sink. It's not so easy. You got to pour it. Now, it's not simply you pour in one part of the sink and then it spills to the rest of it. You got to like shoot water a lot of times on different spots in the sink so it covers every spot in the sink. That's a little challenging. The next is for a porcelain sink. So that's a problem. You can't kosher a porcelain sink. So there you kosher the faucet and the knobs with boiling water. And there you place a basin or an insert into the sink and a rack underneath the basin. And you should wash all dishes and silverware in the basin. And don't fill the sink with boiling hot water. Okay, countertops. Granite, marble, wood, stainless steel, quartz, corian, plastic. Again, I am lenient on plastic. Corian is also a type of plastic, and formica, they can be koshered like a stainless steel sink. So this is something else. You can kosher these countertops with a power steamer that sprays steam, which becomes condensate, very hot water. Let me be very clear about this. If it just produces steam, okay, then it's not good. There has to be, when you place the power steamer on the countertop, there has to be actually condensate, actually liquid, because this is like what's called eroy. Eroy is like pouring boiling water on it. So steam is insufficient. There actually has to be boiling hot water. Additionally, each spot of the countertop must be completely dry when the condensate is applied to it. Okay? This is the steamer that I use, which I know works. It takes a very long time. At least the way when I do it, I put it on a spot, I move it a little bit, and then it like it changes lights from, I know, red to green, because then it cools down. And then I have to wait till it heats up, and then I move it a little bit more. You can't just, use the power steamer and move it willy-nilly while it's cold. You have to make sure that you're only using it, it goes over every single spot on the countertop. Okay, you have to do it slowly, and it should be completely dry. So, because if it's wet and there's hot, apparently it doesn't get as hot like that. So it should be completely dry, and then you go over it little by little, okay? And that's or you can simply pour boiling water over every spot of the countertop. It's messy if you use the water. This is also a possibility, but you have to make sure. A lot of people do not like using the power steamer because a lot of people don't do it right. You have to make sure that you're getting the boiling hot condensate over every single spot of the countertop, and you have to go bit by bit. It goes hot, and then it cools down. Hot and cools down. Okay. So now, some poskim are concerned. That's why they tell you just cover the countertops, because they are concerned that people are not going to get this right. Okay. You should clean and cover ceramic and porcelain countertops because they cannot be koshered. Okay. Even with kosher countertops, if there are deep scratches or cracks that we're concerned that chametz may have gone into them, and you shouldn't kosher them. Kitchen cabinets and refrigerators. In my opinion, you all need to clean them. Some people line the shelves. You want to do that? Good for you. It's not required. The goal is you kosher and clean. That's what you're doing. You're koshering and cleaning. There's no transfer of taste for anything in the kitchen cabinets or refrigerators. You're only concerned about real chametz residue. So if you clean it well, it's fine. If you're nervous, you didn't clean it well, so you can line it if you want. But if you clean it well and there's no residue, then you don't have to worry about lining the shelves or cabinets. If you want to do it, it's fine for you. But, I'm telling you what's required and what's a chumrah, especially in today's situation. Okay, utensils. The following utensils can be kosher through Haggalah. Metal, stone, plastic, and wood, provided there aren't large cracks in the wood. Glass, Pyrex, Duralex, Corel, crystal, cordingware, porcelain, and china cannot be koshered. Anything that's called earthenware or glass cannot be koshered. How do we do Haggalah? We clean it. And then we clean it, and then we let it remain unused for 24 hours. We then place it in a pot of boiling hot water. Make sure there are large bubbles, not just steam. Any pot that has not been used in 24 hours could be used for this purpose. It could be dairy, it could be meat, doesn't make a difference. As long as the pot has not been used for 24 hours, it's fine. If you have a pot that's so big it can't fit into another pot, you can kosher it piecemeal. Kiddush cups. The people ask me this question, the Pesach question chat. Kiddush cups or drinking glasses could be koshered either by Haggalah or simply by Miloy Ve'iroy. By basically, you fill them up with water for 24 hours, empty them, and fill them up for another 24 hours. You do that 3 days in a row, 72 hours. Best not to do it with whiskey drinking glasses because they're sharp taste. So some poskim are strict when it comes to that. So you don't need boiling hot water, but you have to wait 72 hours. I personally kosher my Kiddush cups through Haggalah because I get it done in an hour or two or whatever, an hour, and not through 3 days. But you could do it through this process called Miloy Ve'iroy. Okay, regarding electric mixers, the motor area, okay, someone asked me these questions. The motor area of small electric appliances is often exposed to food and it's very difficult to clean. This is what the CRC writes. Therefore, it's recommended they not be koshered if they're used for non-kosher, and I would say also for chametz. So this is a kosher thing. Let me make a note here. For chametz. Okay, food processors and blenders whose motor area is totally sealed, right? It was totally sealed, meaning they cannot be unscrewed or opened by consumers, are not affected by this, and you can either use... Again, if there's either nooks and crannies in the electric mixers, I would not use it for Pesach. If there are no nooks and crannies, so then you can use it and you just clean it. And regarding the bowls and the blades, so either get new bowls and blades or you can kosher them through Haggalah. Right? I assume the bowls are metal or plastic, so you can kosher them through Haggalah. Okay? High chairs. Am I going too fast? No? Okay.
No.
Okay. Hi, chairs. Again, I will send this. I will send this out. This handout out tomorrow to the Pesach WhatsApp chat. Okay. God willing, tomorrow. High chairs. Clean a high chair before Pesach. Some people have the custom of covering or koshering the tray. It's a question whether it's really necessary. Why is it necessary? Why might it not be necessary? Because are we dealing with residue or are we dealing with real absorbance of taste? So if you clean it, then there's no issue of residue on the high chair tray. If we're dealing with did it absorb chametz taste, so that's a question. Is it realistic that you poured boiling hot yad seletus bo food on a high chair tray? It's highly unlikely. So it's probably not a problem. We're more nervous on Pesach. So some people may are machmir strict to cover it or just simply to dip it in boiling hot, the tray to kasher it piecemeal by dipping it in boiling hot water. Okay. Now, so that's the old stuff that's always been in my handout. So let's talk about cleaning. Okay, so this is what I advise for people who are stressed out. That probably applies to a few of you. Okay, so again, you want to be strict, feel free to be strict. Again, the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Okay, mitzvah of happiness is a mitzvah d'oraisa. The Mishnah Berurah rules that you're only required to get rid of chametz that is more than a kazayas, a little more than 1 square inch. There's a stringency to get rid of crumbs. It's not even a stringency to do spring cleaning, by the way. You know, to clean your chairs from dirt. That's nothing. Some people are machmer, are strict to get rid of crumbs. You certainly don't need to follow the stringency during this year. My suggestions here are based on the following. Number one is, I think that you only need to search for chametz that is more than a kazayas, that's more than 1 square inch, okay? Except in areas that you will likely eat. In other words, I'm concerned, like in the dining room area, so there I'm a little more concerned, because I still am concerned like that you might eat a crumb. If there's like a crumb, I'm concerned you might eat it. You don't violate. There's no mitzvah of bedikas chametz, of searching and destroying chametz that is less than a kazayis, that's less than a square inch. There's no requirement to search for that type of chametz. At the same time, I still am concerned that, let's say, in the kitchen or in any eating area or in a child's the child's clothes pocket that he might have crumbs of chametz. And even if you eat a crumb of chametz, then that would be a prohibition if you'd eat that on Pesach. So I would make a distinction between those areas or those items where it is likely that you will potentially eat, you know, in that area, in which case I would say check for crumbs, versus areas where you likely are not going to eat, where all you would have to do is check for chametz that's at least a kazayis, a little more than a square inch. It's very different checking a room for crumbs than checking for a piece that's a square of chametz that's a square inch. Usually, only rooms where children are allowed to bring sandwiches or cookies are likely to contain such big pieces of chametz. A room in which people do not walk around with food does not need to be cleaned at all. Obviously, people have different children, and some children just tend to walk in rooms. So, again, but if it's a room that's mostly clean, then it's a question whether you have to look or really just go through it very quickly and make sure there's no big pieces of chametz. In the dining room, from my perspective is, you want to make sure you check the dining room and the kitchen really well. The other rooms, I don't think you have to necessarily, you want to be machmir, you want to be strict, you go ahead and check them really well. The other rooms, just check to make sure, you know, that there aren't, you know, pieces of chametz that are a kazayas, which is very unlikely. You know, okay? In the dining room, so where people eat, the chairs and the table, by the way, a lot of what I wrote about this, some of them wrote about this, Rav Shlomo Avinir has a nice piece on this, you can find on the internet. The chairs and the table, that I would check. I'd be concerned for crumbs of edible chametz. I don't think you have to be concerned about dirt in the eating area where people are like, you know, scrubbing down a chair or scrubbing down a table for dirt. Again, you want to do that, that's fine. If you have a lot of free time now, you're just relaxed, you know, whatever, doing nothing nowadays, that's great. Feel free to go right ahead. But you don't have to check for dirt in these areas, okay? Okay? I'm concerned about little crumbs, maybe crumbs in the on the chair that you might just put your foot, your fingers down on the table and, like, touch it, and you might eat real chametz crumbs, which is a problem. The kitchen should be thoroughly cleaned, as I would be concerned for crumbs of edible chametz as well. If chametz is behind a cabinet in an unreachable area, you do not need to look for it. In other rooms, we only need to be concerned with edible pieces of chametz that are a kezias. Between couch pillows, so you put your hand between the couch pillows. Again, only look for edible chametz that's a kezias. If you see a crumb or dirt, don't worry about it. Don't worry. Again, if you want to worry about it, Feel free. But the couch between the pillows, you know, check for edible chametz, it's a kezias. As I mentioned, children's clothes pockets, I would check for crumbs because they might eat those crumbs on Pesach. You should only need to check those clothes. Okay. You only need to check those clothes that a child will be wearing that season. You know, if there's clothing, if the child has, I know we're in springtime, there's winter clothing, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You're not going to find pieces of chametz. You might find crumbs. I don't think you're going to find real pieces. I don't know. You only need to check those books that you plan to bring to the table. It's very hard to fit a piece, a kezias of chametz, a kezias of bread inside a book. It's very hard to do that. However, I would say, if you're planning on bringing some books to the table on Pesach, so there you might open the page, there might be a crumb, and you might accidentally put it in your mouth, so that I'd be concerned about. So again, books that you might bring to the Seder table, that I would just leaf through them quickly. But books that if you make sure, you know, I'm not bringing any books to the table, I'm not going to eat anything, so then I'm not concerned about it. Okay? Toys should be checked. Again, if it's too difficult to check the toys, you could also put away some toys that you don't need, and maybe just, you know, that's, you could always, by the way, if there's stuff that you don't want to clean, you could always seal it away. You, in other words, when you're selling your chametz, what are you doing? You sell your chametz, and you could also sell areas where the chametz is, right? So, why am I telling you this? I'm saying that let's say you have a bunch of toys that are like a box of toys or a chest of toys that you really don't use so much, and you don't want to search for chametz there. You can just seal it up for Pesach, and you can just sell all the chametz in the toys, and don't worry about it. You know, you can set aside, I'm going to use these toys for 8 days, but this closet of toys I'm not going to worry about. Assuming that's an area where the children bring chametz in there. You can just say, you know, this chest, I'm just closing it up, I'm not worried about it. Okay, regarding the cars, okay, if you can't get them checked anymore, you know, or vacuumed anymore. So again, I would follow the same rule. I would say in the seating area, so I'd be worried about crumbs. I'd worried about, again, edible crumbs. I'd worried about edible crumbs. I'm worried about edible crumbs maybe in the seats that you might find, you might eat. Underneath, on the floor, the trunk, other areas, I'm worried about edible chametz that's at least a kezias. Again, you want to check more, that's fine. You want to vacuum, that's great. These things are certainly fine. But I'm saying again, what am I worried about? I'm worried about that I'm going to be sitting in the car, my hands are touching in the areas. I don't know, I touch a crumb, I'm going to eat it. If you have crumbs on the floor that's dirty, I'm not concerned I'm going to eat it. I'm only concerned about a kezias of chametz or maybe crumbs that are on the seats themselves. Okay? Okay. Some people, so that's with cleaning. Any questions on cleaning? Is this a little less daunting or okay?
I have a question about the car, actually.
Yeah.
Isaac's seat kicks in the car.
I'm sorry?
Isaac's seat kicks in the car.
Yeah.
It's smaller than a kezias, but there's a lot of them.
Yeah, so you would have, I would be concerned, yeah, there's all of them together I'd be concerned about. Yeah, I would, okay.
So,
yeah.
Can I go back for a minute to, you said drinking glasses with the Kiddush cups? Those drinking glasses that are actually made of glass, you can use Haggala or the 72-hour method? Because first
yes. Yes, because we're dealing, the reason, it's a good question, the reason why we're lenient is because, hold on, I'm going to, one second, yeah, I'm going to make a note of this. Even glass in my notes. The reason, is Dorchada?
Yeah.
Good, I recognize your voice. Okay. So the reason why we're lenient is because that really all you need to do is what's called miloi ve'iroi. You don't even need to do Haggalah. All you really need to do is to fill it up and pour it out, fill it up and pour it out. When we're strict about koshering glass, that's when it came in contact with liquid heat. Here, there was not liquid heat. It was basically, it was everything was cold. So that's
why... Even if it's been through the dishwasher,
yes,
meaning like...
Yes,
it's
yes,
fine. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question about car seats.
Yeah.
When cleaning the car seats, there are a lot of nooks and crannies where I'm sure that they're coming.
But he's not going to get to them. Your children are not going to get to them.
Right, but if there's like, let's say, a bunch of, let's just say, Cheerios... Inside the
this might be a little inconsistent. I'm more concerned when it comes to if it's nooks and crannies that you really can't get to, so then I think you could be lenient on this. Why would I?
It's possible to dump the whole car seat and try to stick.
If you listen, but this is what I would do. What I would do is I turn over the car seat, dump it out, shake it out a bit, and clean it a little bit. Whatever you get out, you're good. Anything else, a child's not going to be able to reach it to get any chametz. Any chametz that's unreachable, we're not concerned about either.
Okay,
thank
you. That's what I was wondering with the kicks, because he's stretching the car seat also.
If it's in the seat of the, well, it depends where it is. Now, if it's something that's really unreachable. That I'm not concerned. So I would take the car seat. I would shake it out, and I'd shake it out a bit, and then clean it a little bit, make sure, and then you're good. Then you're good. Okay, Tevilas Kalim. So you should know. I don't know if you've like some place. I think for the most part. So we haven't closed our Kalim Mikvah because for the most part we don't get a lot of traffic in our community. So we don't have to worry as much about like social distancing regarding Tevilas Kalim. So what I have here are the guidelines where Willy suggested for Tevilas Kalim that you should wear because of potential concerns. He went over this with Rabbi Glatt. You should wear latex gloves when immersing the Kalim. You should wash your hands before and after using this mikvah. And the surfaces should be wiped out appropriately as often as possible. I guess it doesn't really apply. You should wipe it down. But for the most part, I think that again, there is stuff that's going around for people. Please mute yourself. Thank you. Some people don't feel. Yeah.
So can they
unmute themselves if they have a question?
Yes, people are not doing it.
Okay.
Click on the manage participants at the bottom of the screen.
Got it. I muted all of you. We're good. Okay. Hopefully you can unmute yourself, hopefully, if you have a question. Okay.
They can.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. So that was like a public service. Hello? Okay. So some people are nervous about using the Kalim Mikvah. So I brought here, I don't think it's an issue in our Mikvah. There are some places where they close the Kalim Mikvah because of social distancing issues. I don't think it's an issue with our Mikvah. So we didn't close it. So there is this issue of, you can make your Kalim Hefker. You can make your Kalim Hefker, and here's the way to do this. If you don't want to use the Kalim Mikvah. Again, this is a big leniency. If you're very concerned about using the Kalim Mikvah, so Rav Schachter, use this leniency. You cannot normally use this leniency under most circumstances. But you could rely on this if you have no other alternative. So this is out there. You basically make the Kalim Hefker. You arrange a conference call with three men over Bar Mitzvah that know you, recognize your voice. One of them should at least be 18 years old. Two of them should not be your relative, and you declare hereby declare that these kalim that haven't been tovled yet, they are ownerless, and they respond okay. So that is this process, but it could only be used in a situation where there's no kalim mikvah. But again, like I'm telling you, for my purposes, I think that our mikvah Kalim Mikvah is good for use now. But this is out there, so I bought it to you for those who are nervous.
Rabbi Muska?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to mention that we do have gloves in the Kalim Mikvah, and that the water is chlorinated. But people should be aware that, you know, we should try to maintain social distance, that people should if someone is there, you should wait in your car until they come out.
Good. Thank you. Okay. I'm gonna make that note. I'm gonna say, see, good.
Okay,
thank you. Yeah.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Regarding pots and pans, for example, my understanding is that you don't have to use hagola, you could just dip them in the mikvah.
Oh, sorry. Let me be very clear. So I apologize. This is not clear. Okay. Tevilas kela. I gotta make a note of this. This is when. By new utensils. Okay, sorry, I wasn't clear about this. What? There are two different things. There's kashering. Kashering is when something has chametz taste, and you have to kasher it. If you, let's say, you're buying new utensils, new pots and pans for Pesach, you're not kashering yet. In other words, you're not. There are at least three possibilities you can use for. Let's say kalim for Pesach. One is you have in your cupboard or your attic or somewhere, you know, Pesach kalim, and you just take them out and you use them for Pesach, right? We have a set of Pesach kalim. We use it for Pesach. Some people, this is their first time making Pesach or their first time making Pesach for a while, so they perhaps have to either do one of two things. They have to kasher their chametz pots and pans, okay. So that's what we discuss in terms of kashering. Or, at that, you can only kasher. You cannot dip it in the mikvah for it to work. If you're taking a chametz stick pot or whatever, fork, knife, spoon, whatever, and it's chametz stick, and you want to make it kosher for Pesach, you need to kasher it if it can be kashered. Okay? Wait one second. That's through Hagala, the things we mentioned. Another option is, you can go to the store. Maybe not now, but you can go to the store, you can order kalim. You can buy new pots and pans. When you buy new pots and pans from a non-Jew, then you have to dip it in the mikvah before you use it. So the problem in some communities is that they've closed the kalim mikvah. So what do? So let me be clear, tevilas kalim is only when you buy new utensils. If you have chametz stick pots and pans that you want to kasher, that you can't dip in the mikvah for it to be good, you actually have to kasher through Hagala or whatever the methods that were mentioned above. Okay? Okay. Let's talk about some food products. I don't know everything about every single food product. I'm mentioning here certain things, and this is based on certain questions that I've got and some common issues that come up. The OU contains a list of many food products. You can go on the OU website. Sometimes people have asked me questions, and what I do is I go to OU Kosher and I check it out for them. Again, I'll be happy to do that, but you can also feel free to look at the OU has a great list. CRC also, I think, has a list of foods, whether they require kosher payment supervision or not. For example, they have a list for people who need baby food or baby formula. Right? For babies, kidney oats are sufficient, but again, there are certain, perhaps, baby food or baby formula that might have chametz. So you look at the OU website, they will have a list of baby food that's fine with a Pesach supervision, without kosher Pesach supervision. They also have baby formula that's fine. People ask about frozen vegetables and frozen fruit. What I have here is what is found in the OU website. Frozen vegetables are sometimes washed in water, which sometimes contains some kind of anti-foaming agents that cannot be used for Pesach. So frozen vegetables do require kosher Pesach supervisions, but frozen fruit do not require kosher Pesach supervision. Milk and eggs. Milk and eggs can be bought before Pesach even without kosher Pesach supervision. If you run out of eggs, you may buy eggs on Pesach. It's better to be strict. The concern about eggs is that maybe the chicken will eat chametz on Pesach, and then it will lay an egg. And the question is that an issue or not? That it ate chametz and then it laid an egg. So we try to be strict lechatchila ideally, but so we try to stock up on eggs. But if you run out of eggs, then you could buy them on Pesach, even not those that are not kosher for Pesach. That is not the same thing when it comes to milk. When it comes to milk, you can purchase milk without, you could purchase milk with, that it's not kosher for Pesach before Pesach, but not during Pesach. The reason is that non-kosher for Pesach milk contains vitamin D, which may contain chametz. Now, the vitamin D would be batel before Pesach. There's a rule that chametz is batel, is nullified before Pesach, but not on Pesach itself. So therefore, if the milk was bottled before Pesach, so then the chametz became the chametz in the vitamin D, the potential chametz. I think not all vitamin D has chametz. I'm not an expert on this, but the chametz that might be in the vitamin D would be nullified before Pesach. But if it's bottled on Pesach, then no chametz is nullified on Pesach. So therefore, again, the milk, you should try that. You should stock up before Pesach, and maybe, you know, freeze it if need be. It doesn't have to be kosher for Pesach, but during Pesach, you can only get kosher for Pesach milk. Someone asked, yes, Adam.
I think, Rabbi, there might be some milks now that show the date that they're bottled. So would that make a difference if the bottling date?
Yeah, I would say so. Yes. If it clearly was bottled before Pesach, then I think that's fine. Yes. Okay. Speaking about Adam, so Adam asked me a question about, it's good, about other dairy products. So like yogurt and cottage cheese and sour cream. And could you be lenient, for children, because if they're not kosher, let's say they don't have kosher for Pesach certification, and let's say they're only kidneys. You could be lenient when it comes to kidneys for children. So I asked some experts at the OU, and they told me that they contain cultures which ferment and are often chametz if it's not kosher for Pesach. This is more strict than, let's say, milk. See, the chametz and the vitamin D, that's just an additive, so that can be nullified before Pesach. Something which is these cultures which help form and produce the dairy product, like the sour cream or the cheese, the cottage cheese, the yogurt, they are what's called in halacha davar hamamid. And davar hamamid, it cannot be batel, cannot be nullified, even if purchased before Pesach. I was told that there would be, despite the panic that is going through our community, I was told that there would be sufficient kosher for Pesach food available, and if closer to the holiday there is a crisis, the OU may issue certain guidelines. But this is what I found out in terms of these products as of now. Raw meat and poultry sold in original factory-sealed packages may be used for Pesach even without kosher Pesach supervision. If it is repacked in a local supermarket or butcher, it should not be used. If it was ground, cooked, or broiled meat or poultry, that requires kosher for Pesach supervision. Kosher fish purchased before Pesach can be washed and used on Pesach. If without kosher Pesach supervision, as long as it's purchased before Pesach, so then if it's kosher fish and it's purchased before Pesach, just wash it off and then that's fine.
Rabbi, yes. When you say purchase before Pesach, what about buying it on when you do the nullification on Erev the night before? Can you purchase it after that before the holiday starts, or does it have to be purchased before you do the?
So I would say, I don't know for sure the answer to that question. I would say definitely. It's definitely fine before you actually the night before is fine. The morning before, let's say I think the fifth hour, the time to burn the chametz is like 11:35 or 11:50, depending on what you hold. Certainly before that time is not a problem. Between that time and Pesach, I'm not sure about. I could try to find out. Okay. What's for Pesach? Okay, now ideally, someone asked me about can we be lenient with matzah shmura. Again, I don't know if it's a problem nowadays. I got my matzah. I don't know other people's situation. Ideally, the matzah that's used for the mitzvah of matzah at the Seder should be matzah shmura mishas kitzira from the time of harvesting. you could satisfy this requirement with either hand matzah or machine shmura matzah. Okay, it could be machine shmura matzah. There are some who feel that's better than handmade shmura matzah. Under pressing circumstances, if you run out, if there is no more matzah shmura, hand shmura, or machine shmura, you could be lenient with non-shmura matzah. Why? Because Rabbi Shachter ruled that you can, any matzah that was baked, l'shem matzah mitzvah, that when you bake, you say this is for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah, then that works. And Rabbi Ganak from the OU said that all OU certified matzah is baked like this. Someone asked me about the different shiurim, how much matzah you have to eat if you're running out. I usually send a document about a week before Pesach. When I send this list, I guess tomorrow, I'll send a link to it if you want. The most minimal amount of a kazayis is actually an olive size. We are generally strict when it comes to the size of an olive for various reasons. But the most minimal shear is actually the size of an olive. But that I have a document that has all these shiurim, and you feel free to look at it, and you can ask questions. Regarding the sale of chametz, you can appoint me to sell your chametz online by clicking on the following link. So I already sent that link already out. If you normally do not sell, the minhag generally is to do it personally, but it's a challenge this year. So you can do this through online. We're not following the minhag, but under pressing circumstances, you can rely on this. If you normally do not sell chametz gamur, like real chametz, some people have the custom, they only sell chametz admixtures, but not real chametz. And because of circumstances, they need to sell real chametz, you can do so this year. You do not need to do what's called the hataras nedarim. You do not need to annul the vow. Normally speaking, you make a hataras nedarim, you annul vows, when you basically had one practice and you're stopping that practice. If you cannot follow that practice for a time being due to exigent circumstances, you do not have to make a hataras nedarim. Okay, yes.
I filled out that form tonight, but one of the questions was that you have to exchange a pen, hand the pen over. You have nobody to hand the pen over to.
Okay, it's okay. It's okay. Bidiyevin.
I left it out.
It's fine.
Bidiyevin,
it's okay. Again, we try to be as strict as we can. So like the example here is that, you know, at a wedding, when the chassan picks up the pen, right, to say that he obligates himself to the terms of the ksuva, so his kala is generally not there. So what that means is, you know, you can pick up the pen and give it to, you can give it, what he does is, the chassan gives it to me or gives it to someone else, and even though the kala is not there, that's fine. So similarly, you could pick up a pen and give it to someone else, and that can form the kinyan. We try to do that lechatchila, ideally, when it comes to the sale of chametz, to appoint an agent. B'di'eved, that's b'shas adchak, under pressing circumstances, it's not necessary. I've had situations, even not in this type of year, where someone calls me the last minute and says, can you please sell my chametz? And I even do it over the phone. Again, it's not the ideal, but we're in a not ideal circumstance, and therefore, not giving someone a pen because you need to be alone actually is an ideal circumstance. That's the ideal way to do it.
Thank you.
Okay. Then,
Rabbi?
Yes.
Hi, it's Lori.
Hi, Lori.
My question is, I missed something you said about meat you bought before Pesach.
Right.
That what you said, like if I bought it from a store, okay, in a meat store, a butcher.
Right.
And the wrapping that it came in, Is that what you mean?
Yeah, let's say you bought some frozen chicken, and it said, it's frozen raw chicken, and it says OU, doesn't say OUP. So that's fine. If it's raw, if it's just raw chicken, unprocessed raw chicken, raw meat that's unprocessed, not ground beef, just raw meat, raw chicken that's packaged, and in the original packaging, it says OU, then that's fine, because it's just chicken.
But the butcher I got, they don't put OU on. I know it's, you know, kosher meat if I'm like, got it. So.
Yeah, but I, so there, if it's, if the butcher, I don't, like, I don't know. I, what I'm saying is I don't know, like, if that's, I don't know if maybe he used chavetz to kalim or not. So I would check with whoever the bashkia, like, if there's, if that butcher probably has, I assume the butcher has hashkacha. So you want to ask the mashkiach. The mashkiach may say that any meat that he cuts, I don't know, 3 days before, it's kosher for Pesach. I just don't know the facts.
No, I understand. Okay. So I think you're talking about something else, Rabbi, that comes like from Empire Rack before.
Yeah, or even you get a gourmet glove, whatever it is. That type. Yes.
Okay, correct. Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, burning the chametz. So we have made an executive decision in our community. We are not going to, due to social distancing, we are not going to have any public chametz burning as in previous years. So this, I copied this from in Baltimore. This is what the VOD sent out. And it looked good to me, so it's good for them, good for me. If you own a barbecue grill on Wednesday morning, you take your 10 pieces, you recite Kol Chamira, and then you, if you don't have the grill, then in a bag, you can carefully break up the small pieces. Now again, we're talking about if you're kosher your grill for Pesach, then don't do this. Okay? But if you have a barbecue grill, just burn it on the grill. If you don't have a grill, you don't want to use the grill, just in a bag, carefully break up the small pieces of bread into tiny crumbs and flush the crumbs without the bag down the toilet. Okay? Just make it tiny crumbs down the toilet. Again, because ideally, you should destroy the chavetz via burning. That's a chumrah, that's a stringency. If it's not feasible, then you can certainly fulfill the mitzvah simply by destroying it, flushing it down the toilet. Dispose of the bag in the outside garbage can, then recite the Kol Chamira. What's complicated is that let's say you have other chametz in your garbage cans. So let's say, I mean, this really is an issue every year, potentially. So I guess normally every year you might take all your extra chametz and just bring it to the place, to the garbage pail that burns the chametz. So if you have additional chametz in your trash cans and you haven't brought it out to the front, you can say this line here. And what you're basically doing is you're making your garbage cans and your chametz hefker. You can still use your garbage cans even though they're hefker. It's a little complicated, but the rationale for this is that you have to make the chametz hefker, and the chametz also cannot be in your reshus, in your domain. So if the garbage cans are yours, and the chametz is in the garbage cans, and it's not going to be picked up before chametz becomes forbidden, then you're going to have chametz in your reshus, in your domain. I don't have it here, you could also like pour some kind of bleach onto any chametz. You pour bleach onto your chametz to render it unfit for animal consumption. That's also good, but this is the way. Again, I'll send you this document, and this is the language where you're basically rendering your chametz ownerless and the garbage can ownerless. Again, this is only if you're still going to have chametz in your garbage can once you know the prohibition to own chametz arrives.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you nullify, make your garbage cans ownerless, are you not allowed to take them with you, let's say you move out and whatnot?
Are you not allowed to take them, I'm sorry, for what?
Are you not allowed to take them with you after Pesach, that you move to a different house?
You're moving to a different, no, when to take, you're planning on taking your garbage cans with you?
No, if you made your garbage cans ownerless.
No, oh, so then you just acquire them after Pesach.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what you do. You reacquire them. There's a little bit of a legal fiction. Technically speaking, if I know that you rented your garbage cans ownerless, I am allowed to take your garbage cans, and you have no legal claim on me. I will give you my own personal guarantee that I personally won't do that. I can't speak for the other 78 people on this phone call. Okay, but you're really making it ownerless. You have to have intent. You're making it ownerless, and hope, and you have to hope that no one else takes your garbage cans. Okay, a very challenging issue that has come up deals with inviting single or elderly people for a Seder. There's a whole question. It's very, this is obviously a tremendous rachmanos, tremendous difficulty. You know, we're used to the mitzvah and Pesach. We got to Labincha. This is the holiday of Mesorah. Grandparents, great-grandparents, and grandchildren and children all together. And it's, again, I feel blessed. I'm with a lot of my children. I'm going to miss, I'm missing one of my children or one of the children and her husband. And I'm missing my granddaughter. But a lot of people are alone. It's very hard. And it can be very debilitating. And there's a balance between the potential danger of contracting, this virus and being alone and, potentially very depressed during the Seder. This is what, there's a letter that went out. There are different recommendations that have gone out. And the recommendation that I am making now is in a previous letter that was signed by all the major rabbinic organizations across the Hashkafic spectrum. It might change in the 7 days, I don't know. And this is what it said: individuals living alone or those absolutely unable to prepare for Pesach may choose to self-quarantine for 14 days. And then if asymptomatic, they may join with a welcoming family, a local family, without additional company that is similarly asymptomatic and that has been disciplined in staying home and limiting their interactions outside the home to the above absolute minimum. It should be described above, but there was a description above. I have to correct this language. Okay, what it means is, for only essential, people for the next 2 weeks who are going to practice social distancing, so can have an elderly or a single person. These guests may join one family only for the duration of Pesach and must carefully observe the highest standards of hygiene and social distancing. The elderly and high risk, I'm saying this applies to singles, the elderly and high risk must seek medical advice before considering this. I'm not a doctor. This is the best I can do. This is very important for our community and for other people here from other communities. They should also do this. If an individual will be alone for Shabbos and or Yom Tov, our community must ensure that he or she has a buddy that will check up on him or her daily while maintaining social distance, e.g. waving through a window. What do I mean by that? Let's say we know someone in our community is going to be alone for Pesach, and they're just going to stay alone. They're going to stay by themselves. So fine, they're going to stay by themselves, they want to be safe, but we want to check up how they are, but we want to maintain social distance. So we need to make sure that we have every single person in the community has a buddy. And that buddy will say, 10 a.m. every morning or 2 p.m. every day, I'm going to come to your window and I want you to wave outside the window to make sure that you're still, you're still okay, you're fine or whatever. Some kind of, or knock on the door again, depending on how much social distancing you want. But it's very important to make sure, okay, they're by themselves, so we'll get back to you in 3 days. No, you need to make sure that there's a way to check up on people who are by themselves for the holiday of Pesach. The last thing. Okay, there are these, it's going around the web now, about Zoom Sidarib, leaving your Zoom on and turning it on. Okay. So let me speak about virtual Megillah readings before I speak about this. Okay, we adopted a possibility of virtual Megillah readings for those people who are quarantined with the coronavirus. There are people who called me from the community legitimately and asked, are we going to have a virtual Megillah reading in Shul? Now these people were not quarantined. These people just wanted to, they didn't want to be in a large group setting. They want to have a Megillah reading with a few people. And they thought that it's legitimate, and I understand why. They thought it was legitimate to have a virtual Megillah reading. And the answer is that, no, a virtual Megillah reading is very, 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 very b'di'evet. You really shouldn't do it. If someone has absolutely no choice and they're quarantined, so this is the best you could do, and this is what you're supposed to do. You shouldn't feel bad about it. If you're quarantined, don't do something which could potentially endanger your life. So what do you do? Okay, so we'll do the virtual Megillah reading. So according to some opinions, you're Yotzei. But if you can have a Megillah reading in a small quarters and do it individually, like one person reading for five people, then that's fine. Then do that. Don't have the virtual Megillah reading. The concern about saying, okay, we could now just allow everyone to have Zoom, Siddurim, that you're violating Shabbos, you're violating Yom Tov. That's a serious thing. At the same time, At the same time, there are people who are vulnerable due to isolation, due to serious depression, and perhaps if you leave them alone, they may, based on whatever their well-being, they might harm themselves. If you are that person, or you know of someone, then please contact me. There are potential leniencies, you know, for to do maybe some of these things, maybe. But this is something only in the most, this is only when it's like a suffik pikuach nefesh. In a situation where a grandparent is absolutely devastated that they can't be with their grandkids and they want to be able to schmooze with them on Seder night, it's absolutely forbidden. It's absolutely forbidden. Let me make no mistake about it. If, God forbid, someone's in a situation where if they're by themselves, it's a potential pikuach nefesh, so then we have to have a conversation about that. And it's obviously you're balancing someone's, you know, psychological, mental health. For a safek pikuach nefesh, for a doubtful pikuach nefesh, there are potential leniencies. But it's not a carte blanche, you know, heter, leniency. So what I would tell you is the following. You should not tell people that, you know, if they feel bad, they're going to be alone. They're very upset, they're very depressed, they're very sad. It's rachmanus. Don't get me wrong, it's very difficult if someone is by themselves for the Siddurim. I'm actually want to put Mordechai Torchider. He put up a YouTube, like a five minute YouTube video with some suggestions for people who'll be alone for the Siddurim. It's hard. It's very hard. My heart goes out to them. But the leniency about potentially turning on a machine for purposes, that's only when we're dealing with potential safek pikuach nefesh situation. Again, if someone is in that state, 100%, please speak to me, and we're going to talk about it, and we'll discuss that situation. That is all. These are the topics I want to discuss in a way that hopefully by following these guidelines, we can do the best that we can and really do well and do the best that we can and have a and be mesameach for Yom Tov as best as we can. Sometimes we have to change, the reality that we thought beforehand. We thought that our Pesach was going to be X, and now it's going to be Y. So now that we realize it's Y, so hopefully I've suggested you some ways to perhaps make it a little bit easier to prepare. But let's try to make the best of it. We're all in this together. We're here to support each other. And let's really try to be mesameach ourselves as much as we can during this Yom Tov, and try to think about new opportunities to be mesameach, a candlelight dinner of a Pesach Seder instead of a whole 20-person affair, or other things. It's not always going to be easy, but let's try to do the best we can. And these are hopefully nisyonos that hopefully we'll look back at this and say, you know what, we did really well and we learned new things. It's not easy. Don't get me wrong. It's not easy. It's a challenge. We're all challenged by this. And hopefully we'll come across with, we'll pass with flying colors. Are there any final questions? Any other topics that you want me to talk about?
Rabbi Mustad.
Yes.
Mel Schindel, hi, there.
Hi, Mel.
Florida.
Hi, Mel.
How are you?
Baruch Hashem.
Hashem. How is Yael and Netanya?
Thank you. They're good. They're good. They're on the mend. They're good. Baruch Hashem. Thank you.
Right. Thank God. We're going to be here for Pesach. It was too much of a challenge to come up.
Right.
And also in terms of everything else.
Sure.
And here in Florida is very convenient. So I want to wish you and the family and the rest of Kahal a very kosher and Pesach.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, probably won't be speaking to you soon. But this is a wonderful way to do things. I doubt whether you can see me. I don't think that's on the TV or the video.
I can. Oh, there you go. I can see you now. I can see you now, Belle. Okay. Okay.
So, anyway, it was very interesting to hear what you said, particularly about the Zoom in terms of Seder. I think that's really very, very important for some people.
Right, but again, let me make this very clear. Do not. This is something that you should check with your rabbi, whether it's me or whether some people are from other communities. You should really check with the rabbi first when trying to deal with this very delicate situation. Yeah. That's
unfortunately everything is closed down here.
I understand. Yeah.
But not that terrible. And also, our community here in Deerfield Beach does not have any cases that are known.
Okay.
So